and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Some people are calling it a fraudulent scandal that is, quote, unprecedented in Michigan political history. Five GOP gubernatorial candidates are accused by the State Bureau of Elections of having their campaigns forge signatures that would give them access to the gubernatorial ballot. Now, the campaigns themselves say they had nothing to do with this, that they hired people who went out and broke the law on their own. But that doesn't really matter from a legal perspective. Fake signatures on ballots fake signatures on petitions for the ballot are not legal and can mean that you get disqualified from being able to run. That was what the Board of Canvassers decided yesterday, that Detroit Police Chief James Craig and four others had forged enough signatures to keep them from the primary ballot later this year. But we still don't understand or fully know what happened here or what it means. What does it say about our politics? What does it say about the Republican Party? What does it say about these candidates who each say they should be in charge of state government? Now, I'll remind you also that several of these candidates who were disqualified were among the loudest voices casting aspersion in November of 2020 on Detroit voters as we went to the polls in the presidential election and cast our ballots. They said there was massive fraud during those elections, and they say that those votes should have been disqualified. Now, there's not a shred of evidence that's been presented since then to prove that Detroiters did anything wrong during the 2020 elections. And yet these candidates still say that the election didn't turn out the way it should have, that those votes shouldn't have counted. Now they stand accused of fraud on a much larger scale and with much more serious consequence. It is beyond thick irony. Here to talk about what is going on in the GOP, what is going on in the governor's race, and where we will end up by the time we get to the primaries in August is Jonathan Oesting. He covers Michigan politics for Bridge Michigan and has been all over this story from the beginning. Jonathan, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Hey, good morning, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Last time you and I talked about the possibility of these signatures, we were only talking about James Craig. Now we have four others who are potentially, at least, in violation of campaign rules, and the Board of Canvassers met yesterday to talk about it. Talk about where we are. What happened?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the Bureau of Elections took a deeper dive into the signatures since you and I talked last and uncovered a lot more fraudulent signatures for a lot more candidates than anybody had any idea about. They uncovered, they estimate 68,000 forged signatures on nominating petitions for 10 different candidates, and that includes the five Republican candidates for governor. So yesterday, the Board of State Canvassers met. This is a bipartisan board. It's two Republicans and two Democrats, and they basically have to certify candidates for the ballot. And they did not do so for the five gubernatorial candidates. However, it was a split vote. The Democratic canvassers both voted to keep the candidates off the ballot. The Republican canvassers both voted to put them on the ballot. And the argument comes down to not whether all these signatures are actually fraudulent or whether these candidates submitted fraudulent signatures, but whether the Michigan Bureau of Elections should have double-checked every one of these 68,000 signatures against versions that are stored in what's called the qualified voter file, which is like a state database of, you know, signatures from voters when they register for driver's license, for instances. So That was the big debate yesterday, but the end result, regardless of that 2-2 vote, is these candidates were not certified for the ballot, and if they choose, they're going to have to go to court in a hurry if they still want to make the ballot.
Yeah. So we still don't know fully, I guess, how this happened, how candidates for governor ended up hiring people who engaged in this kind of fraud. And that's what it is. It is fraud to make up signatures or to forge signatures on a petition. What broke down here, and what are the campaigns saying about what happened to them?
Yeah, well, I think we discussed this before, Stephen, but there was a real demand for circulators this year. You could say that was unprecedented as well, because there are like a dozen petition drives out there for ballot initiatives. There were 10 Republican gubernatorial candidates all trying to collect signatures at the same time. And the end result was these signature firms, who are sometimes paid to collect signatures, had a hard time finding enough workers to actually do all this stuff. And it seems at least one of them, maybe more, turned to some people who were sort of, you know, known to not to, to cut corners on this sort of thing, these circulators. Now, it turns out the state suggests there were as many as 36 circulators who were submitting fraudulent signatures. And the state linked some of them to a firm called First Choice Consulting, which is based in Warren. It's led by a guy who, in fact, was convicted of petition fraud in Virginia back in 2011. So doesn't necessarily have a pristine track record here. Now, both the Craig James campaign and Perry Johnson's are the two highest profile gubernatorial candidates, have suggested that they did not hire this firm directly. But the thing about petition drives is they can become very wild. You can hire one company who then hires a subcontractor, and maybe even that company hires a subcontractor. So you're right. We still don't know exactly how these fraudulent circulators came to be working for the campaigns directly. But somebody down that line of contractors and subcontractors decided to hire these folks, even though, as I mentioned, some consultants I've talked to on the Republican side have said some of these circulators were well known. They were on do not hire lists for some people, for some signature gathering firms, but apparently not all of them. You know, the result here is, yeah, like you said, an unprecedented signature forgery scandal.
Yeah. I'm talking with Jonathan Osting. He covers politics and state government for Bridge, Michigan. He's been writing about the potential fraud among GOP gubernatorial candidates. Yesterday, we saw the Board of Canvassers deadlock 2-2, which means that five of those gubernatorial candidates will not have access to the ballot. They needed at least a majority of that board to be able to overcome these errors on these petitions. We're talking about what happens next and what this means for the GOP, what it means for the gubernatorial race in the fall, where we are with Michigan politics, with this kind of massive fraud taking place among major candidates for one of the major parties. We want to hear from you as well during the conversation. What do you make of these fraudulent signatures among GOP candidates? Are you surprised by what we're seeing and learning? Especially want to hear from folks who are Republicans or vote for Republicans or just identify as conservatives. Are you disappointed that this is affecting potential candidates for governor, people who you might actually cast a ballot for this fall? If so, what does it tell you about their ability to manage the entirety of state government, which is what the governor does? Does this suggest a lack of preparation? Does this suggest a kind of sloppiness that would scare you if you were deciding among candidates? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Before we get to listeners, Jonathan, I do want to talk about what happened at the Board of Canvassers yesterday. That's another extraordinary wrinkle in this story from my point of view. You had the two canvassers who voted to not certify Detroit's election results because they thought there was fraud against any evidence that suggested that they had none, also vote to put these five Republican gubernatorial hopefuls on the ballot in the face of massive fraud, evidence that the Bureau of Elections says they've never seen the likes of before. It strikes me as an extreme example of partisanship, the likes of which, again, we haven't really seen so much in this part of government. The Board of Canvassers is supposed to be a neutral body. It's got partisans on it, but it's not supposed to make decisions according to one party or another. It's supposed to uphold the rule of law. Talk about this vote yesterday.
Yeah, so you're right that one of the canvassers was involved in that vote on certifying the 2020 election. That would be Norm Schinkel. He's the chairman now. He abstained from voting to certify in 2020. He chose to just sit it out, which certainly if another canvasser would have done the same thing, it means Michigan's election would have been certified. So mm-hmm. It was a unusual controversial move at the time. The other canvasser on the board now is Tony Daunt. He's a Republican, and he's new. He replaced another canvasser who stepped down. And Tony Daunt, he was sensitive to this. Tony Daunt resigned from the Michigan Republican Party State Central Committee recently because he thinks the party is still perpetuating Trump's lies about the 2020 election. He does not believe those lies, and he was pretty upset by what happened in 2020. So he's not, the diehard Trump loyalist you might think here, but mm-hmm. he certainly did seem to be persuaded by the arguments from Republican attorneys who, again, aren't saying there wasn't fraud. What they're saying is the state should have double-checked every single one of those signatures turned in by these accused circulators, because maybe some of them, a handful, were legitimate. And, Tony Daunt said, out loud on multiple occasions, my gut tells me these probably are fraudulent, but I cannot base these important decisions on assumptions. Mm-hmm. That's the line he drew. I will note that canvassers often make decisions on much larger petition drives for initiatives based on samples of signatures with as few as 500 being reviewed. Mm-hmm. So certainly there's a lack of consistency here on how they're treating these candidate petitions versus much larger initiative petitions, where there's never an expectation the state is going to spend significant time reviewing every single signature, because to do so would be incredibly time intensive, costly, and take a lot of staff manpower that the Bureau really doesn't have. So, it was a pretty extraordinary day yesterday, no doubt.
And you have heard and seen some Republicans stand up and say, this is not okay. This is not the way we want this party to conduct itself, that the rule of law should be applied evenly and fairly, and that when Republicans or Republican hopefuls do things that run afoul of those rules, they ought to suffer the same consequences as everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a number of people saying, that, like you said, these candidates made a mistake. Ultimately, the buck stops with them. Most campaigns, I think we talked about this before, Stephen, most campaigns do try and vet signatures themselves to make sure they don't end up, putting in fake or fraudulent signatures or otherwise invalid signatures. And it doesn't appear to have happened, at least not on a large scale this time around. So you had folks like Stu Sandler, a former executive of the Michigan Republican Party, say yesterday that these candidates ran garbage petition drives and should be held accountable for doing so. But instead, a couple canvassers voted to give them a pass. It wasn't enough. As I mentioned, this is definitely heading to court now. The candidates have the option to go to the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court, their choice, and ask to try and get judges or justices to order canvassers to certify them for the ballot. That has to happen very quickly, though. It's going to be a wild week or so here. The state wants to finalize its candidate list for the ballot by June 3, because by June 18, they're legally obligated to have the ballots printed and sent out to overseas and military voters. So not a lot of time here for candidates to make their case in court, but there's certainly, James Craig has already indicated he's going to try. Perry Johnson's campaign has suggested the same.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Sean in East Point. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Stephen. Happy Memorial Day. I give it to you for keeping your composure. I have lost mine. My stomach is so upset right now. I'm so ashamed and embarrassed, especially of James Craig. He should just duck out. The Republican Party wants to control people. You know, this whole forced birth thing. I want to know who's going to prison, when they're going to prison, and how long for doing this fraudulent stuff. A felon by mistake, folks, they get 5 years in prison. I want to know who and when is going to prison for this.
Wow. Sean, you know, it's a very visceral reaction to what's happening, and it's reflective, I think, of the things that I'm seeing in other places on social media. The double standard, I think, that is being revealed here is really troubling. The idea that these are Republicans, somehow they ought not be held to the same standard as everybody else is something that that I think we've got to be able to confront and think about. Jonathan, one thing that Sean raised that I'd love for you to address is the criminality of this. Is this something that someone could be prosecuted for? Now, I doubt that would be, of course, the candidates themselves or even the people who were running their campaigns. But the folks who orchestrated this fraud, which was pretty large scale and quite intentional, do they face the possibility of criminal charge?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The Bureau of Elections this week actually referred their findings to Attorney General Dana Nessel's office. She had said earlier in the week, once she got that, she, you know, would most likely be conducting a very thorough investigation. The circulators themselves, it's pretty clear under state law that they could definitely be prosecuted. They could face up to 5 years in prison or fines. As well for filing these fraudulent petitions. There are, statutes as well that suggest that if it is proven that the candidates knew about this or that the campaigns knew about this, they could be held criminally liable as well. I will make clear that the Bureau of Elections has said they have no evidence to that effect, that any of the candidates actually knew this was going on. But there are statutes that would punish them if, in fact, that is proven down the line. But certainly, to the question of the circulators, I imagine, many, if they're not already fleeing the state, are going to face prosecution in the near future.
Again, Sean, appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go to Karen in Macomb. Karen, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Boy, I'm glad I work remotely so I can call in on a regular basis. I really hope that all five of them are not allowed back onto the ballot. I find it very interesting that it's always the Trump supporters crying foul and saying, you know, voter fraud, yet they've engaged in it themselves. I have experience with circulating petitions in the past for keeping Michigan wolves safe and also to stop any further mourning dove hunts. And I can tell you, those petitions are extremely specific in how they need to be filled out. What we did is we went way above and beyond with our signatures because we knew we would probably run into some problems with signatures being thrown out. You can only do so much. You know, of course, you're going to ask if people are registered to vote. Mm-hmm. And you watch them very carefully when they, you know, sign the petition. Sometimes they might, you know, go into the next line. You don't want that because then that just ruins the whole sheet. And you can't have abbreviations. So it's extremely specific. Now, we can't do anything like we're not going to ask people, you know, can I see your driver's license? Can I see your voter's registration card? You sincerely hope that they're going to be, you know, honest and sincere, that they are a registered voter, that they are using the correct address. But again, you really need to make sure that you go way above and beyond in getting your signature so you don't run into any problem getting it on the ballot.
So Karen, I really appreciate you bringing that up. And Jonathan, I've got just about a minute left, but I want to have you address how hard it is to do this. This is a difficult task to run a campaign, to collect signatures for it, to make sure that they're all great and not potentially fraudulent, and to have the right number. It's not just raise your hand and say, hey, I want to be governor. You've got to run a good organization. And that's one of the points that I think emerges from all of this mess.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, to the caller's point, I mean, volunteer circulators, campaigns that are actually able to motivate their supporters to go out and collect signatures themselves, almost always do much better in terms of the validity of the signatures they collect. It's when you have to pay people that you run into these problems because, you know, especially this year, the petition company that the state has linked to some of these fraudulent signatures has told us they were paying $20 a signature this year because they were having trouble recruiting circulators. And that, you know, experts I've talked to said that just incentivized people who might have wanted to cut corners to cheat to get a big payday. So, campaigns like Garrett Saldano, Ryan Kelly, these real grassroots candidates, they did very well. They didn't have any signatures challenged. Governor Whitmer, she used all volunteers, easier to do when you're so well-known and have, you know, the power of county parties behind you. But she submitted 30,000 signatures, all collected by volunteers. Not a challenge. No accusations of fraud. So, It is hard, but a lot of candidates have done it over the years. This year is certainly unusual.
Yeah. Okay, Jonathan Osteen of Bridge Michigan, always great to have you here. Lend your expertise to these conversations about state government and politics. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Peter.
Coming up, we are going to talk about Movement, the Movement Festival this weekend, and techno, its history, its birth in Detroit. Detroit DJ Jeff Mills, who's a headliner at Movement this weekend, is going to join us to talk about it. We want to hear from you about how excited you are about the Techno Fest here in Detroit and whether you're going downtown. Stay tuned for more Detroit Today.